Does anyone else have this problem that I have? Do you ever lose your keys? Anybody out there? Okay, a few of us, right? I lost mine this morning. That's why I was late. Just letting you know. What about your coffee mug? Anybody else lose those? Coffee mug? I'm always drinking coffee and I'm always setting it in someplace foolish and then walking away and doing something else. What about sunglasses? Any sunglasses losers out there today? Oh, some hands shot up with that one. Yeah, see, when we're in a hurry to go somewhere and in our house and I'm trying to get out the door and I'll say things like, oh, I want my sunglasses, I gotta find my glasses, and my kids will stop me and go, Dad, they're on your head. Right? You see, I have what my wife lovingly calls inattentive blindness. Meaning, she thinks it's a real condition, where I'm so wrapped up in my head and my worries, my stressful thinking, that I can't see things that are right in front of me. And you see, rarely do I actually lose these items. Usually, they're right somewhere in plain sight, even right in front of me. But my condition that gets worse in times of struggle, in times of stress, makes me hard to see what's right there. You know, sometimes we have trouble seeing something, even when it's right in front of us. But especially if we've been through something traumatic or something difficult and painful. Sometimes we can't see what God is doing around us. We can struggle to see hope. And sometimes it's because we're distracted or we're busy, but sometimes it's maybe because our hearts are really heavy and there's like this veil over our eyes and we feel like we're never going to experience hope again. I think that's where we find the women at the beginning of the story today, walking to the tomb on that first Easter. I want to take a minute to kind of imagine that scene together in our minds. I mean, picture it. They get up early in the morning before the sunrise. Their minds must have just been a fog of pain and grief. The world around them was heavy and silent and sleeping, and so they quietly gather up the few things they're going to need, and they step outside, probably just as the sunlight starts to creep over the horizon, the stars fading. I imagine they probably don't even have the words to greet each other that morning, so all they do is look at each other with a deep sigh, and they turn and start to walk toward the tomb. In solemn silence, with eyes downcast, they're carrying with them just a few things, their spices and ointments and oils, but also their broken hearts. All their hope had been in Jesus. These women, like so many others, had been shown a hope like nothing they had ever seen before. This new way of life that Jesus proclaimed and lived out. It wasn't just idle talk. Jesus actually fed the hungry. He healed the sick. He welcomed outcasts and strangers and sinners. There was this new world being created that was more beautiful and wondrous than anything they had ever thought possible. Jesus just exuded a love that seemed to know no bounds, no exclusions, and it poured out of him. In fact, this love of Jesus, it utterly transformed everyone in his orbit. God was doing what had seemed impossible, but then it was over, just like that. In the blink of an eye, and the hope that they had dared to hope seemed like a dream. And so on this cold morning, they just trudge forward, one foot in front of the other, devoid of hope. But of course, this is Easter. This is Easter. God had already done the impossible, and there were signs all around them, but they couldn't see them yet. We see the evidence in the story, right? They get to the tomb, and this massive stone has been rolled away. Clearly, it's a sign of hope, a sign that God was up to something here, but they don't see it for what it is. They just wonder, did someone move it for us? I kind of have to wonder, were there other signs of hope that morning on the way there? Were the birds singing more exuberantly than they usually do, singing praise to the risen Lord? Was the sunrise more spectacular than it had ever been? But they couldn't see it because their eyes were downcast. We don't know, but we do know they stepped into the tomb and his body was gone. Another sign that God was up to something here, but they couldn't yet see it. They're still just confused until suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them, it says in the Bible, right? And the angels appear out of nowhere. And whenever I hear this part of the story, friends, I have to stop because I have some questions here about how did they appear? I mean, was it they weren't there and then they were, like in the blink of an eye? Or was it like a slow fade in front of them? Or was it a trendy, swipey TikTok transition kind of an entrance? We don't really know, right? And I have to wonder, were they silent? Did they kind of walk up behind them and be like, hey, what's up? Or was it like, bing, we're here? We don't really know. I sometimes think of it like a Star Trek beam me down, woo, kind of a sound, right? We don't know, but whatever happens, they're scared at first. The women are afraid, but then the angels start to speak and explain what happened. And they say, I love this. It says, then they remembered his words. It's like they're hearing these angels speak and they go, wait, yeah, Jesus did say that, but he was serious about that? We thought it was like another parable or something. And they don't see Jesus yet, but they believe. They believe, and it's like this infusion of hope surges back into them. So they get up and they run from the tomb, they run back home, and they tell the 11 disciples. And how do those disciples respond? They don't believe. It says that these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. I love how one Bible translation translates the Greek here. It says, but these words seem like pure nonsense. Jesus is risen? What are you talking about? You see, and Peter, at least Peter had the sense to get curious and get up and go check it out for himself. But the other guys, they weren't buying it at all. They didn't believe them. Makes me wonder, with them looking back on that moment later, how would you like to have been one of those guys who had tried to mansplain to the first witnesses of the resurrection how these women were wrong, right? Not a good thing to carry with you. Over the years, I myself have put my foot in my mouth enough times when my wife has something wise to tell me that my boys and I now have a saying in our home. It goes like this. When mom and I are arguing about something, they always remind me, hey, Dad, mom is always right. Yep, you got it. That's some free advice, everyone. But you can understand, right? They had seen Jesus die with their own eyes in the most horrific way. And because of that, they believed the lie that hope could die. But here's the truth. Hope cannot be killed. Love cannot be killed. Today we celebrate this truth, friends, that hope lives. Not the kind of hope that's a fleeting feeling, but a hope that is anchored to something much, much deeper. Not the kind of hope that's based on the evidence around us, but a hope that's based on the heart of God. See, 2,000 years ago, big men with big titles and big palaces thought they could silence the very heart of God. They thought they could put an end to God's heart for the poor and the sick and the widows and the orphans and the aliens. But no, God's love will not be silenced. God's love will never be silenced. God's dream for this world will never yield to the ambitions of small-hearted, self-serving men. All their braggadocious chest-puffing, their so-called power was nothing, nothing compared to the everlasting, unstoppable, unshakable love of God in Christ Jesus, Jesus who was love incarnate, Jesus who is hope in the flesh. The love of God, this hope of Jesus, it can never die. Friends, hope lives. I know it took the women some time to believe it that morning. It took the 11 apostles, those guys, a little bit longer. Sometimes we guys can be slow. But maybe you find yourself slow to believe that hope lives today too. You know, back then it certainly looked like the powers of the world had won. Jesus had truly died. All the evidence pointed to the end of the story. But here's the thing about hope. Hope is most powerful precisely when all evidence points to the contrary. That is why the Apostle Paul writes, who hopes for what is seen, but we hope for what is not yet seen. See, God was writing a different story. God was writing a better story, and God is still writing our story today. You know, we gather for Easter year after year after year to hear this story. But this year, this Easter, feels more potent, more important than ever to me because I think we need a resurrection of hope. We need to know that we're not alone and we're not forgotten. And I'm encouraged when I think about how churches all over the world, all across the globe, are packed today. I mean, literally, billions of people gather together to hear this story of resurrection hope, a story about when all evidence and logic said it was too late, it's time to give up, it's time to let hope die. A story about how it was then that God does the impossible. Today, we are reminded that the God that we worship is the God of the impossible. Not the God of the improbable, not the God of the highly unlikely, the God of the impossible. You know, I've talked with so many of you who are really struggling to find hope right now in this season, maybe for different reasons. Maybe you've lost someone and it feels like life is never going to be as vibrant or beautiful again. Maybe you're overwhelmed with feelings of fear or despair when you see all the things going on in the world beyond your control and it's overwhelming. But whatever the reason is, I know so many of us right now are resonating with these women walking to the tomb, struggling to find hope. So today, God says to you, to me, hope is alive. God is saying, I am still here and I will never give up on you. I will never give up on this world. Friends, Jesus is alive, and so hope is alive, and we are not alone. This Easter, God is moving. The Spirit of God is hovering over the church and awakening something, awakening a renewal, something profound. This Easter, Jesus is moving our eyes to look up and be witnesses to the beauty and the joy and the generosity and the compassion that's bursting forth from the grave, that's breaking out of this church over the world. The violence, the anger, the hatred of this world, it will not have the last say. They can try their best to silence our hope, but hope, this hope, cannot be killed. They can try to put our hope to death, but the God of the impossible is just going to breathe new life into it again and again and again and again. Friends, I believe that this Easter God is stirring something up, awakening something in the church across the world like a renewal we've never seen. I believe that this year, Easter isn't just a day where we come together for a moment to remember an old story, but a day where God changes everything. A day where God is beginning to write a new story, a resurrection story. God today is resurrecting hope. And God is calling you and me, all of us, the whole church, 3 billion strong, to carry this hope, this earth-shaking hope, out into a world that needs to hear it. My friends, rejoice. Hope lives because Jesus lives. Let us pray. God, we thank you that you remind us and fill us with hope in times when hope seems like a commodity that is just depleted. But Lord, today we remember that you defeated death itself, and what more do we have to fear, God? You are reigning on high over all the earth. And God, I pray that your Spirit would move among us today, a move among your church, all over the land, all over the world. God, help us to remember what you've done for us, who you've called us to be, and who you're creating us to be. Help us to share this story of hope, of resurrection, of new beginnings, new life, and ultimately your unending love with the world around us and all that we do.